Before we officially start, I must give a special shout out to the boys over at Recovery. Much like myself and the lads, Chris and Ian are a couple of rugby fanatics like we all are, and they've created various products with recovery in mind based around natural CBD remedies. Head over to their Instagram page or website and use the code FREEBLOKES for 10% off all their natural products and feel the benefit today.
Good afternoon, good morning, and good evening from wherever you are listening from. My name is Jamie Robinson, and welcome to episode 107 of Three Blokes and the Rugby League podcast. Back to the three-man booth today as I welcome back Callum Wood and Jed Amos-Goddard for the first round of the NRL playoff series, or the NRL final, whichever part of the world you come from, with a bit of a sprinkled in, a bit of Super League as well, with two rounds to go in the Northern Hemisphere. We might as well dive straight in. There's been four games this weekend in the Southern Hemisphere, the NRL Finals. The first game up was one that you covered, Woody. Melbourne Storm 40, Manly Warringah Seagulls 12. I'll let you round up that one, mate.
Well, if you listen in closely, you can hear the sound of Manly and their fans coming crashing back down to earth with a bit of a vibe. Obviously, no shame in getting beaten by Melbourne, especially this rendition of them, but this was an absolute bullying, truth be told. It were even possible after the season they've had, Storm seem to be finding another level for the finals. And, you know, what's new in that? Yeah, the team starts. Melbourne had 60% of the possession, completed at 90% in comparison with 72. 1,678 metres against 994. Five line breaks to none, 35 tackle bursts to 19. And overall, 40 points to 12 was pretty flattering to Manly, really. Storm, absolutely relentless on attack and especially defence. Just for a bit of further perspective, Storm's starting interchange was Harry Graham, Cammy Kamika, Nico Hines and Big Nelson, which is just obscene. And, you know, that quartet had get into the starting lineup of every other NRL side, no question. Storm scored the first within 3 minutes. Kenny Bromwich and Christian Welch then crash over and they're 16-0 up after 30 minutes and the game's already done from there. There's no way back from Manly, not against this Storm side. Seagulls did score next. Jason Saab got a try and that was one of the few real shots they fired. Got a second later on after a bit of a stinker from Lume, but like I say, game's already done by then and, you know, there were just a few decent moments in Manly's game which never really got going. Storm's back absolutely trounced Manly's. Big carries, excellent floor work. And that allowed the likes of Grant and the backs the chance to really advance the play and attack the line. All the recent focus, rightly been on Tommy Turbo, but you know, do not sleep on Ryan Pappenhausen. Grabbed himself a double, kicked seven goals, even had the absolute cheat to slot a two-point field goal with time up. It was just rubbing absolute salt in Manly's wounds. And in contrast, Turbo, rarely able to get into the game whatsoever. Second half especially, had four touches and made 25 metres. And Stormer, one of the only teams who've managed to really shackle him this season. This is the second time they've done it. So maybe they have found that secret formula which every other team's been trying to find this year. Whole backline for Manly struggled massively, as did the team in general. Morgan Harper had a real night to forget. Daly Cherry Evans himself wasn't firing. They never got going whatsoever, like I said. Stormwise and Cameron Munster pushed Pappy to being the best player on the park and probably just pipped him. Making metres, coming up with assists, offloads, 40-20 at the end, and a one-on-one steal. Absolutely all action. What a player he is. Justin Olam not far behind as well. Up there for centre of the year, probably between you know him, Matt Burt and Joey Manu. He had another great game. Grabbed the final try. Made a massive break to help set one up. And of course, he is a block of granite. Loads of huge performances up front for Storm. A few I've mentioned already. Welsh, Kenny Bromwich, Nelson Asofa, Solomona, and even losing Brandon Smith early didn't affect them. He played about 13 minutes and had an absolute storm in those 13, but didn't come back from a bit of a head knock, but it looks like he's going to be okay for the next game in 2 weeks. Surprisingly, I saw a stat that this match has come out with the slowest average play of the ball speed in a game this season. It's the first to be over 4 seconds, which is surprising watching it, to be honest. It didn't feel like that, but Storm averaged 4.25 and Manly 4.11, so no, kind of surprising that one, but did kind of jump out to me. Going to throw this over to one of you two. You know, we've raved about Manly recently. They got themselves into the top four, had a mega run, but they've not really beaten one of those top sides, you know, excluding Parra, who I don't think fall into that category. But you know, have they been found out now? And you know, have they been a bit flat-track bullies through the second half of the season? Jed, I'll come to you on that one.
I don't know if they've been necessarily found out. I just think they've come up against such a superior side. And I think you've sort of half hit the nail on the head. With the play of the ball speed. I think the way to stop Manly is to stop them getting a quick play of the ball, because if you allow Tom Trbojevic, if you allow Daly Cherry Evans, if you allow them players to be on you quick, then they're going to tear you apart. We know how destructive their back line is. So I don't know if it's a case of that they've been found out, but I just think Melbourne's approach to the game and their game management and slowing the ruck down enabled them to be superior in every other element, because they neutralised Manly's strike. And that's what I think is the action. So I wouldn't say they've been found out. I think just Melbourne just completely controlled the game in a much better way than Manly did. I don't know if you've got anything differing from that, Jamie.
Yeah, one thing that stood out for me were Melbourne's line speed, pretty much in a similar sense to what you were saying. They were just neutralising that strike effort. The other Trey Evans, had they got any time on the ball? Turbo, like you say, that 25 metres in 40 minutes blew my mind compared to what he's been doing recently. And he's definitely not the type of player that's gone hiding. So Melbourne have obviously picked him out purposely and hidden his attributes. So I just think Melbourne are just such a superior side to every other team in the competition. I did say on the previews with Jed last week that I think Penrith have been pushing him all the way, but we'll talk about it later on, but their performance wasn't up to standard. So Melbourne are the team to beat 100%, and Manly just weren't up to scratch. Leaking 40 points is a big blow in the playoffs.
Yeah, maybe it is a bit harsh to kind of negatively judge them in what they did against the Storm compared to maybe what they'll do this weekend might be a bit of a better yardstick. Kind of a bit more of a granular incident in the game. Hopefully you've seen this one, but there's a Daly Cherry Evans pass around about the 29th minute, which was judged to be forward by the touch judge. That kind of stopped Manly scoring them. They did score a few minutes later, luckily. But what did you make of that one? I couldn't really see much forward in that.
I say this every week. I feel like I say this every week, but genuinely one of the worst decisions I've ever seen. Just so obviously, not even a flat pass, just a normal pass. So weird. You can't blame it on momentum. You can't blame it on angles. You can't blame it on kind of the touch judge moving at a different angle to the play. It was genuinely just a normal pass, and I personally couldn't understand how they've given that as a forward pass. And I did feel for Manly at the time, because I can't remember the specifics of the result. But they were within touching distance, and it might have even been the first try of the game that got ruled out. But really rough, and I could definitely see the heads go down as soon as it happened. I thought it was such a poor decision.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think more would have been made of it, but a few minutes later they got a few back-to-back six again and did score them, so kind of got ignored and kind of papered over. Now you kind of both touched on it. The Storm member, come to you, Jed. Can anyone stop Melbourne from here? They're absolute outright favourites by a mile now.
I mean, they were favourites anyway, weren't they? But it is, I don't want to say it's theirs to lose, because the teams left in are very, very capable teams with high quality players in there. But it is theirs to lose. You would think that it takes something special from another side to try and maybe knock them off the perch, especially now they've got the week off to rest players to fully recuperate. And we've seen, I know there's the age-old question, would you rather play with momentum or would you rather the week off? I don't think that really affects Melbourne too much. If it was a team that's maybe not used to this kind of situation, you'd probably want to play with momentum. Melbourne have been there. It's tried and tested so many times. They know how to win games. And they'll love the fact that they've got a week off now and can go all guns blazing in 2 weeks' time, playing probably, I can't think, probably either Penrith or Gold Coast, is it?
Penrith or Parramatta.
And I think I think they'll definitely get to the final. But in a final, anything can happen on the day, mate.
Courtesy of I think it's Rugby League Stats Guy on Instagram. I did see something today that there's only been one team in the last 14 years that have won the grand final when they didn't have the week off. And that's amazing in general. Out of interest, Jed, do you know who that is?
I'm trying to think off the top of my head. In the last 14 years, yeah. The fact that you came to me quite quickly, I'll have a guess at Cowboys, but I don't remember us losing.
Yeah, it was the Cowboys in 2015. So that's the only
time. Who did we lose to?
I think you lost in the first round to Brisbane, didn't you? And then you played them again in the final.
I can't remember that off the top of my head. Yeah, it's six years ago, so maybe not sure. Maybe knowledge isn't too up to scratch like I thought it was, but that shows how much the week off does help teams then, really.
Yeah, and I think it happened a couple of times in the noughties and the 90s, but Yeah, since the new format came in, it's only happened once. So sorry to interrupt there, Woody, but yeah, I thought it was quite interesting, courtesy of, I think it's Rugby League Stats Guy. You might know better than me, Woody, but he's a good one on Instagram for stats like that.
Yeah, spot loads of stuff on his page. It is Rugby League Stats Guy is really good. And on that basis, then I guess it's not looking great for Parramatta, but maybe we can join the Cowboys then and double that up. Moving on to a bit of a tighter game then. Jed, you cast your eye over this one. Roosters squeaking past the Titans, 25 points to 24, and it was probably the game of the weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a very exciting game, a proper back and forth game where you'd think neither team wanted to really give the opposition the upper hand, but yet both sides continuously came up with silly errors, which allowed the opposition to do exactly that. Roosters did come through victorious, as you said, Woody, with brilliant game management from Trent Robinson, bringing on Sam Walker in the final minutes to deliver that winning drop goal, which I will come on to a little bit later on, as it is a little bit controversial. But that nearly wasn't even the case at all, as Titans should, and I clarify, should have scored if it wasn't for some absolutely horrendous decision making by Patrick Herbert. For those of you that didn't catch the game, it was a great break from Bo Fermo, who, I have to say, the last probably 6-7 games, probably been the Titans' best player. He's been a really, really good forward for them, and I'm looking forward to seeing him progress next season. Went down the wing, flipped the inside pass, I think, to Philip Sami. Kelly out of a half, switched it to the next side. Patrick Herbert, all he had to do was give a simple pass to Corey Thompson, who had a walk in. And the Gold Coast journey continued, but he didn't. He was greedy, and the 1 point was enough for the Roosters to take them through. Really, really poor decision. I mean, I'm just going to come to you two pretty quickly. What is Patrick Herbert thinking there? Jamie, I'll come to you. I mean, he must have felt like he wanted the ground to swallow him up after that.
As a Tigers and a Wakefield fan, I'm used to kind of collapses and people not doing the job correctly. And even watching this game, I was on my feet screaming the flat down, thinking that the Titans were going to do it in the last minute. Like you said, he had Fifita and Corey Thompson, who's one of the best finishers in rugby league outside him. Dummied, messed about, tried flicking out, totally out of play. I think the pressure just got to him. If that was someone like Josh Morris, if that was someone like a Zach Lomax, a Latrell Mitchell, you know, someone who's been in that position for a long time, been in high-pressure situations, I think they'll have done the right thing. He's just totally got messed up in the pressure and gone a bit greedy, and it's just not gone for him, has it really, mate?
Not at all. And I'll throw that to you, Woody, but I also just want to ask, what's your opinion on Corey Thompson's very visible spray immediately after?
The whole thing was painful to watch, and echo exactly what Jamie said, but on the break before that, how good is that Sam Walker cover tackle to get back and, you know, stop them scoring off the initial break? But yeah, it's great vision from Kelly to then switch the play out to the right quickly, but I have no idea why he doesn't just give that pass out to Thompson, and not surprised by a quick spray from him. And you can see Fifita, can't believe it either. You know, he's kind of walking around behind the player, but wondering what's just happening, how they've completely bombed that.
I've seen quite a few people in the press sort of like, and just on social media in general, to kind of criticise Corey Thompson for his spray, but in the heat of the moment, he's just cost his team a place in the next round. I think he's got every right to do that. And I think, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, was that not Corey Thompson's last game? I've saw someone, is it not? I might have made that up, because I'm sure I've seen somewhere that is, I might be getting confused. I'm not too sure.
Sure, anyway. It might be, but I've not, what I've seen, but you know, I'm totally with you, mate, in terms of even at an amateur level, you get annoyed at that not being passed, never mind at the highest of the high and a chance of getting through to the next stage. It, like, I think the journalists criticise me of never played sport.
100%. And I think Herbert will take it all on the chin. He won't take it personal from Corey Thompson. And I'm sure they'll, in a week or when it's a little bit less so, they'll be having a laugh about it. But Patrick Herbert knew exactly well what he's done. And I don't think there's anything wrong with Corey Thompson spraying him. Back to the game anyway. As it was always, the mercurial man in James Tedesco led the Roosters around the park throughout the game. And he seemingly had a hand in everything, which was quite literally the case in one try, as a quick one-handed flick allowed Daniel Tupou to score a nice finish in the corner. I mean, the Titans began to fatigue in the third quarter, potentially due to the lack of intensity from them throughout the season. But it was interesting to see their reply and improvement as the game progressed. Every try from the Roosters came from their back line, evidence that the Titans had finally tightened up their middle, which we've spoke about quite a lot throughout the throughout the pod, throughout the season, that they're too sloppy around the middle. And the Roosters felt that they had to try and break them down with their width. Yet equally, the Titans' middles all made significant tackle breaks, except for Proctor. Mofo with 7, Tino with 5, Fita with 3, and Fita with 5, and Fermor, Clark, and Wallace all with 3. I mean, the Titans actually showed, in my opinion, some excellent resilience and determination to not bow out. A lot of teams going down to 18-6 to the Roosters would completely fold and capitulate, but fair play for the Titans for not doing this in the biggest game in, what is it, 6 years, 5 years since they've been in the playoffs. So fair play for them for actually giving it a good effort. And you know what? It was some uncharacteristic poor defence from the Roosters that allowed these tries. Brian Kelly just sort of ambled his way through and just went under the sticks. And it's something that we've not really come up against the Roosters. We've known them that no matter what, they're going to put their bodies in the line. But their defence on this game was questionable in a lot of the game. And then Tino just getting a lucky bounce and getting it to draw the points level. So Roosters, if they are wanting to progress, I know it's going to be a tough ask, but the defence in this game definitely needs work. And I know Trent Robinson won't need telling that. I mean, I'm also, in terms of tries that I've gifted, I've never seen a try so perfectly gifted for Jareth Wallace, right under the sticks. If you've not seen it, Matt Ikavalu, who had poor game, to be fair. He had a lot of errors. It were a rough night for him. Probably could have been at fault for one of the tries in the first half where he should have maybe cleared the ball. I can't remember which Titans player was scored in the corner. But he just absolutely knocks the ball in off his own line, lands in Wallace's hands, and he goes over unchallenged. And it's a straight, easy kick again to tighten up the points. I mean, if we look at the stats of this game, it was incredibly tight, but not of a high quality. 67% completion each, which again is way below what is expected, especially in the finals. 50-50 split in terms of possession. 12 errors versus 13, with 13 being from the Roosters. 6 offloads each, yet the glaring difference was the missed tackles, as I've just touched on. Roosters with a whopping 46 and Titans only with 20. And if I was the Titans players, I'd be bitterly disappointed that I can't, that they weren't able to take advantage of the poor defence that Sydney were doing, because other teams would have taken advantage of that a lot sooner and put the game without even being in the contest, without a drop goal having to settle it. But it's the experience of the Roosters that takes them through and they live another day while Gold Coast are left to root what could have been. On the drop goal, it's been touched upon on social media. If you've not seen it, Jairi Hargreaves, and I can't remember which other player, has stood next to the player of the ball as the ball is passed to Sam Walker to drop the goal over. This, by the law of the game, is illegal. It is not allowed. However, the drop goal stood. Jamie, I'll just throw it straight over to you with that opening. What are your thoughts on this?
It's obviously been blown out of proportion. I think this week, especially with the Wayne Bennett comments, obviously he's been winding everyone up, as he always does. I think the case is, if Bennett doesn't say anything, people don't really say much about it, because it's actually, I mean, what am I compared to anyone else? But even playing at amateur level or with UJed at unit, it's part of a game plan. It's what you do, even if you're not really specifically taught it. If someone is out the back, last tackle going for a kick, you purposely stand in a position that's going to protect your man. And especially you're going to do that on a drop goal setting in this type of scenario. I think it's one of them. If it's going to be cracked down, then it's probably got to be at the start of the season, as opposed to at this crucial point. You can't really start penalising people because it's probably done in every single game. And the funny thing was, Wayne Bennett was going on about it constantly, but the Bunnies did it so much at the weekend. It was absolutely ridiculous, more than any other side that I saw. And we'll get onto that in a minute. But yeah, it's against the rules, but it's one of them that I think, don't put yourself in a position where they are going to get into a game-winning drop goal situation, I think, more than anything else. It's kind of getting annoyed at a situation that you could have helped yourself against anyway.
I think the more bitter for the fact that they should have won the game and they had the opportunity to win the game. If Patrick Herbert passing the score, no one's talking about this drop goal either. On the next one to you, Woody. We sort of discussed it briefly last week. With the recruitment that the Titans have had and their improvement on last year, is this season a success for them? Or do you think they'll feel like they've not really got what they should have come from in this season? Do you think they should have gone maybe a little bit further?
In a word, I think, yes, it has been a success. You know, they've been really erratic at times and some of the star players have been really inconsistent, but the target would have been to make the eight, and however they squeezed in, they just about managed that. So I think it has to be a success based on that. And really, you know, they should have stolen this one as well, which we've mentioned a few times. And So yeah, a couple of years ago, they suffered a wooden spoon when nearly 365 days without a win. I think they lost 14 games in a row at some point. So actually playing finals footy for the first time in 5 years shouldn't be too much of a disappointment. But yeah, I guess, you know, the big recruitment driving, the way they went out of it will be disappointing. But hopefully it's a good building block for next year and the players are a bit more bedded in.
I think there's pros and cons to both arguments, but I feel like more the way they've played in big games will be more of a worry, and the way they've let their guard down at times is quite disappointing, regardless of that they made the eight. I mean, they made the eight, but lost more than the one, I think if that's right. And I think that's more disappointing. I think the basis should be anything to make the eight. You should win more than you lost. And in another season, they wouldn't have made the eight. So I can see why it'd be a success, but I can see why there's a lot of areas that they still need to improve on. And just quickly now, it's going to be Roosters versus Manly next week. As we've said, week in, week out, Roosters are down on troops. So I don't know how they still managed to cling on and still in it. And Manly will be looking to want to bounce back in an emphatic way. I can't see the Roosters doing it personally. I think Manly will have too much and they'll want to. Tom Trbojevic will have a big game. Is there any way the Roosters can manage to stop Manly overturning them?
I think this is going to be a big score. I think the completion rates say most of it in this game, 67% each. It probably was the best game of the weekend, the most exciting game, but it was probably the worst in terms of the quality. There were a lot of drop ball, like you said. Like you said, Manly will definitely want to bounce back. They'll have, I think they've got all the troops on board as well. They haven't got anyone major injured. Roosters are the Roosters. They've had some absolutely horrendous luck this season. I think they've probably reached their point this year now. This is probably as far as they're going to go, and I think Manly will probably put a big result on them. But I only got one prediction out of four right this week, so am I to say.
What about you, Woody? Who are you going for?
I guess I'm going to have to go against it and back Roosters to sneak it in. I was looking at when they last played each other, and 6 months today since they played each other back in round one, and Roosters absolutely battered them 46-4, but that was with a very different team, and whilst Turbo was injured, so not really much to go off there. And they've said Manly kind of need to prove they can beat one of their own big teams, open close brackets, and aren't just those flat track bullies I mentioned. And looking at it, the way Roosters played at the weekend, I don't think they could be favourites. But to go against Jamie, I'll back them to sneak it by a point again.
I think it's going to be a long, long game for the Roosters. But one thing that I do hope is that the other Morris twin managed to come through, which probably will be his final ever game. I'm not going to say the first name because I get him confused all the time, which is why I said the other Morris twin. But a remarkable career, so it'd be nice for him to get a try and bow out in style, but he's probably going to be on the back of a defeat. Up next, the Penrith Panthers 10, the South Sydney Rabbitohs, the big, big shock of the round. And you got to cover this one, Jamie.
First of all, mate, it's Josh Morris.
I was going to say Josh, but I thought in my head, I thought, is it Brett?
Super stuff. Yeah, it's definitely kind of the one result of the weekend for me personally that everybody seemed pretty set on. I felt as though most of the results were relatively predictable, even though, like I said, I got one out of four right this week. The Panthers were in the best form in the NRL at the minute. The best players are all fighting fit. The Bunnies have some question marks around their selections. Latrell Mitchell sitting out for the rest of the season. But up steps Wayne Bennett, who throws out all the pre-match chat, you know, about the blockers, making sure that the referees are switched on and the officials, and just delivers a vintage Wayne Bennett performance to take the Bunnies into their fourth straight prelim final, which is absolutely impeccable record. The only thing less impeccable is the fact that they've lost the previous three. Wayne Bennett is, you know, it's what we've touched upon all season. It's what the guys in the know in the NRL media just constantly talk about. He plays the media. He plays his own team sometimes. He knows for a fact that he's picking a certain lineup for a certain selection. And he does this for a reason. It's just what he's like. He's just a superb coach. It wouldn't surprise me if they go on to the grand final. I'd quite like to see him win it, actually, I think, as well. But fair play to the old cat. What an unbelievable achievement he's pulled out of the bag here. The main battle to pick out would be very easy to do so, and I'm going to do it, is between the two sharpshooters. The two Lions going up against each other. Adam Reynolds against Nathan Cleary. Just an absolute litany of world-class players spread throughout these squads. But if neither of these blokes play, then the Panthers and the Bunny are two totally different outfits. I'll start on Reynolds. Me personally, I don't think I've ever seen a player make a team tick so meticulously without any major plaudits like Adam Reynolds does. That's not to say nobody speaks about him, because we know he's very highly rated. We know he's won awards before. We know he's won premiership before. He's been capped at Origin level and so on. But he's just never a player that is getting the back pages, you know, the pictures on the back pages, not getting the social media garnering or anything like that. But the best thing he seems to do, in my opinion, I was watching this game with a keen eye because I know I'd be covering it, and I've seen it throughout his career for Moniz, but he just allows time. I'm sure we've all played with them type of players, Jed, probably more than me and Woody. Woody, I won't speak on behalf of you because Jed's played a bit of a higher standard. But they just seem to have more time on the ball, and they give a correct pass every single time. He takes the ball to the line. He's not afraid to drag a defender with him and also take a bit of a beating as well in the same one. He's got a near perfect kicking game. He allows other players in his team to make a final pass or hit the line at pace because he's always in control. And I think that's a big part of it as well. Cody Walker's always got an extra second on the ball because Adam Reynolds has allowed that for him. Dane Gaga is allowed to hit the line, either an inside or an outside line, because Cody Walker's given a perfect pass off the back of Adam Reynolds. And Jackson Paul is allowed to score a try, Alex Reynolds and so on. It all comes from whatever Adam Reynolds is doing in the middle of the park. He played the full 80 in this game like he usually does. He managed 8 points and 3 penalties in 1 conversion, 96 run meters. He got a line break assist, 602 kick meters, and a variety of different methods of in-play kicking as well. Very rarely does anybody else in the team take the kicking responsibilities on. And I think as well as losing him at the Bunnies next season and just losing his influence in the middle of the park, I think the Bunnies are going to miss his kicking game a hell of a lot in 2022 because I don't know who's going to take that over. It definitely won't be Anthony Milford. And Cody Walker, obviously, as we know, is more of a running back anyway, so we'll see where that goes. Moving on to Nathan Cleary, he is just majestic for the better part of this game. His reverse banana kick for the set up the try for Stephen Crichton is genuinely one of the best in-play kicks I've ever seen. He's so close, in my opinion, to kind of entering that stratosphere of Andrew Johns and Cooper Cronk for how he can just change the game with his boot. That reverse banana kick, Andrew Johns was actually on commentary and he was explaining how those aren't any fluke at all. He's doing them 30, 40, 50 times a day at training, and that's why it's coming off. It was so perfect. It was outstanding. He's obviously a much bigger body than Adam Reynolds, obviously, so he's involved in a lot more of the final play. Not sure if more pressure needs to be taken off him, but I'll leave the pressure to another conversation at another time after we've determined Panthers' finishing spot. But Cleary was, in my opinion, he was definitely panicking towards the end of the game. He was trying some very risky plays that didn't eventually come off. He was trying, you know, chips over the top or passes out the back that just weren't connecting. And I don't know if he needed a bit more of a steadier head or he needed to maybe give the ball to Jerome Luai a bit more often, but I'm not entirely sure on that one. But big win for Adam Reynolds anyway throughout. Panthers just found themselves being out-muscled in the middle of the park, I think, in my opinion, which has not really been the case for the majority of this season. I think with the loss of Moses Leota just before kickoff, I know, Jed, you spoke about it before, his partnership with James Fisher-Harris is one of the best in the league in terms of starting props. And he's just such a strong body with a great partnership with Fisher-Harris, like we've said, and Api Korosau as well, and offers something totally different. Matt Eisenhuth is a good player. Obviously, he's come from the Tiger Sauce. I know him quite well in terms of his playing stats, but he's just not that type of player, what Moses Leota is. You know, Moses Leota is able to carry sometimes 3 or 4 men in the tackle, pulling someone else out of the defensive line, really hurting the defensive line as well. Several times, he's done that in games that I've watched and he's just proper spot on with it as well. And also as well, just kind of the middles, they're obviously trying to ship the ball out wide, Penrith, a bit more often than they usually do. And Matt Burton and Brian Tutto just didn't have the space that they would usually have as well. I know they very rarely have bad games. I don't think they did in this game, but you very rarely see Matt Burton and Brian Tutto get pushed over the sideline. And that happened to both of them individually in this game quite a bit. And the Bunnies' outside defence was just so effective all game. So was the middle of the park. Tom Burgess was absolutely outstanding. Still a bit underrated, in my opinion. I won't say under the radar because he's very much in the bang in the middle of the radar. But we know in terms of like the Burgess brothers in general, he's always been kind of the twin that was a bit more dampened down. But 212 run metres, 21 overall for himself. Overall, the Bunnies pack were just stronger, bigger and more effective. They earned so many more penalties in the middle of the park as well. The likes of Yeo and James Fisher-Harris were definitely getting frustrated and giving away penalties left, right and centre. and just got out-muscled, in my opinion. The Penrith Panthers just got outplayed at their own game. Very, very lastly, Blake Taff. Well, I don't. First of all, as I don't know how to pronounce his name, I'll come out and say that. They were saying Taff. They were saying Taffy. I've known it as Blake Taff, so I'm going to stick with Blake Taff. But he made a very costly error very early on in the game, and he dropped the ball from a very easy punt up the field. But very rarely did he put a foot wrong from there, and he was very simple in his attacking play. He didn't really need to play like Latrell Mitchell, and he definitely didn't. Nothing too flashy, not stepping out of the line. I'm more than happy to link up with the likes of Cody Walker and Dane Gagai when needed. He got one try assist, two line break assists, and 113 running metres, which sounds pretty good to me. Fair play to Blake Taff, and I think he'll probably end up playing again there in the prelim finals as well. Woody, I'll come to you first, mate, because it was a game that you were involved with last week, and obviously it'll be the mirror image of this in the following week as well. Parramatta rested some stars. Melbourne have been kind of weaning their stars in and out of the past couple of weeks. The Bunnies have rested some stars over the past couple of weeks as well. Penrith decided to go full strength. Yes, they put 40 points on you last week, but has this come back to bite them in the backside?
Oh, it looks like it based on the result, yeah. And in theory, it might have been good for a bit of continuity to keep the players playing before the finals, but it really wasn't that necessary to have that team out against the Eels kids. See, at the start of the day, when they played the Eels, the minor premiership was still available, but once Storm won, they could have rotated, moved some players to the bench, brought some reserves in. In hindsight, they probably would have done things differently and used the rest of time. I don't know if they can really use that as an excuse and say it had much of a bearing on this loss other than Scott Sorensen being out injured from that one. But yeah, looking back, I think they would have rested a few.
Superb stuff, mate. Jed, obviously, I've just mentioned about Blake Taff, and you know, Wayne Bennett's like he could still change it last minute and put Alex Johnson there or even Cody Walker there potentially as well. But is winning the NRL Grand Final now achievable, even though they're going to be without Latrell Mitchell?
I'm inclined to say yeah, just on the base that they've managed to knock off the Panthers. And knock off the Panthers who destroyed the Rabbits twice this season with Latrell. So I think definitely they can do it. It's always going to be, I mean, I will say now, I think they are going to make the final, and I think it will be a Melbourne Rabbits final, personally. Sorry, Woody. But yeah, I'll say that they can, because it's Wayne Bennett, and he knows how to spare his players up. And I think maybe if they don't utilise Blake Taff too much right now, and even in the prelims, but then maybe try and utilise him a little bit more in the final, to try and catch Melbourne off guard. Maybe that might be a route that they'll go down. But I think they definitely can win it without Latrell, just because of the players they've got around them. And they've got, the, like you've said, Jamie, they've got the best game manager in the NRL, in the game of rugby league, Adam Reynolds. And it will be a very close affair. And if it comes down to a drop goal or 2 points, I'm backing Reynolds to slot it over from anywhere on the pitch more than the Melbourne, who they have got Pappenhausen, but from the touchline, it's no contest who's going to be more likely to nail that one. So, yeah, I think they can. I still think it'll be a tough ask, but I think they can win it without Latrell, mate.
I know you're very marginally biased in this one, Woody, but do you make any changes if you're Penrith going into next week's game?
Yeah, rest all their best players. looks like Dylan Edwards should be fit again, I think. So he'll slot straight back into fullback, and then either Crichton moves out to the wing in place of Charlie Staines, I think probably misses out, or potentially Crichton goes into the centre and Brett Naden on the wing. I don't think it needs an awful lot of tinkering in the pack, but hopefully for them, not for us, that Moses Leova's back. And then I think this maybe utilise the interchange a bit better. I was looking at it, and Spencer Linnea only got 11 minutes and Davita Pango Jr. only got 23, which I didn't really get. So potentially it can rotate their pack a bit better.
Excellent stuff, mate. Very apologise to our listeners if we have just spoiled anything, but I'm sure you're aware anyway if you do listen to the podcast. The next game and the final game of the weekend up at Rockhampton at Brown Park was Parramatta Eels 28, Newcastle Knights 20. Woody's got his vintage Eels jersey on just for the occasion, just to, obviously the Tigers and the Cowboys just narrowly missed out for me and Jed. But I guess we're kind of closet Eels fans for the time being, mate. What did you think of the game?
Finally here with a smile again. The Eels go marching on. Yeah, this was proper finals for, you know, looking at it as a bit more of a neutral head on. It was a real seesaw contest, had a bit of everything, loads of drama, plenty of lead changes, some really good tries, some big performances from the big players, and as ever, a good sprinkling of controversy at the end, which we'll touch on later on. Now, this is last chance saloon for Parra and the Knights, and At times, it was very disjointed from both. It definitely wasn't a perfect performance from Parra. Probably what we've come to expect from these two teams, especially in this second half of the season. The Eels, Mitch Moses absolutely led the way. In the end, he just about outgunned Kalyn Ponga and dragging his team through to another week at least. Moses was the real difference. He's absolutely class. It's one of his better performances, and it's coming the final, so hopefully he can back this up next week. When you look at some of the team stats, it was ridiculously even. Both sides completed at 89%. Five line breaks to four in Eels' favour. 28 busts apiece and 8 errors apiece. You know, it's really kind of a hair split between them. Wasn't looking great for Parra when Gufferson kicks the first kickoff out. Knights get a penalty, and then Tuala scores the first of his hat-trick within 90 seconds of the first whistle, and kind of head in hands at that point. But Parra did get it together, and a bit of a scoring burst either side of half-time really wrestled the momentum back. And between 35 and 45, we scored 3 unanswered tries. Still took a very debatable penalty try for Will Penasini with time ticking away to seal it. But on balance, I'm obviously going to say this, but from watching it, Parra did deserve to set up the clash with Penrith next week. It wasn't pretty. Plenty of sloppy moments, but a win is a win. I think Knights have probably flattered to deceive for most of the year, and once again, not enough of their spine stood up here. And kind of Ponga trying to do a lot on his own, but scoring 20 points should and could be enough if you can defend well, but too many mistakes from them. Like I said, Mitch Moses led the way, but both centres in Wonga Blake and Will Penasini were great, and probably one of the first times this season our centre partnership have both actually played really well and looked pretty solid. Blake Ferguson bagged a couple of tries too. Papa, RGC and Junior Paulo up front were absolutely brutal, and but I'll give a massive shout out to Ray Stone as well. He did a great job filling in a hooker. Kind of worried when Lussick was out to join Marnie, but I thought he was absolutely class and probably one of the better nines from the weekend overall from all the teams. But Newcastle got loads to do ahead of next year if they want to get back in the mix and get back in the eight again, especially when the draw isn't going to be as kind to them. No, they only played the top 6 once each this year. I think this was a massive chance for them, you know, coming in against the Eels. They've got potential major change in personnel coming next year, and it could be a long while before they find themselves in that position again. Well, there's a few controversial moments in there. I mentioned the penalty try, but come to you on this one, Jamie, as a medical expert, but Tyson Frizzell, should he have come off straight away following his HIA? No, the obvious answer is going to be yes, but it wasn't a good look, was it? And there's obviously still a lot of work to be done around head injury assessments in the game.
I'd be very careful using the word expert there, mate. but yeah, I once again, mate, I was watching the game, and first of all, I'm never one to speak down about another physio or another medical professional, because I've been in that position in the centre of the field trying to assess a player, and it's so difficult with the player in front of you, where you've got the coaching you're in, you've got your fans around you. It must have got to a point where it was determined that he was fit enough to play on for that, obviously, however long it was that he ended up on the field before he came off. I think he ended up playing about 50 to 60 minutes, actually, overall, which is a lot. But when you watch the incident, he's not exactly knocked out, but you can see he's concussed. He kind of can't get up from the floor. He manages to get up to his feet. He's very jelly-legged. Obviously, the game is stopped for him initially. I think if the physio was kind of looking at it from a camera angle, he would have known straight away to take him off. But I think it must be worrying, because in terms of how they assess these head injuries, sometimes they will kind of ask the player to recite a certain phrase or a certain number of words. And I imagine that the more on the season it gets, these players kind of memorise these words. I don't actually know how it would work. It would be good to get a current rugby league physio on or a medical professional on just to see what the protocol is around this. But I do wonder if that's the case, because I wonder if you two watch it as well. In my opinion, I couldn't believe he was staying on the field.
I couldn't believe it. I've men. If there are any NRL physios out there listening, then, you know, ring in and get yourself on here. And that was one of the two major kind of talking points from this game. There were a few, but I mentioned that penalty try in there. Yeah, hopefully you saw this one. But firstly, there's a couple kind of strands to it. There's the Guffo kick, whether he dropped it before kicking it. And then there's the actual awarding of it. And it's maybe a bit more of a talking point, given there was a bit of a similar incident in the Roosters game, wasn't there, where Radley could have scored and he was a bit closer to the line. And that one was a sin bin, but not a penalty try. So what did you think of this one, man?
Oh, it was a really poor decision. I think if Radley's isn't given, this should not have been given in a million years, because Radley's was a much more clear opportunity. He was over the line, I think, in that game as well, and stopped from grabbing it. how they can confidently say that he would have regathered the ball and score is beyond me, because he still had about 5 meters to go for the line. I think the person has denied a try scoring opportunity, but I think it's a very, very bold decision to say that he would have scored that, and you're setting a dangerous precedent then. Penalty tries are there for when you are guaranteed 100%. There is no doubt about it in your mind that that player would have scored. And in my opinion, they can't 100% say that he would have scored that try. So I think it shouldn't have been a penalty try. It should have been a normal penalty and have gone for the 2 points. But I think a penalty try is the wrong decision for me.
You said it, mate. But I mean, as a Neil son, I'll take it and move on to next week. But last kind of look at the Knights then, and said there's going to be a bit of personnel change, and this year was a big chance for them. But what do they need to do to get back in that top eight again then? What do they need to do recruitment-wise and game plan-wise as well, I guess?
I think it's going to be very difficult in terms of even just replacing someone like Connor Watson. They weren't expecting to lose him so quickly. There is talk about Mitchell Pearce leaving. Can't think of anyone else off the top of my head. You might correct me and you might say otherwise. But I just think it's... I don't know what to do as a Newcastle team, as a squad. They've done what kind of what Gold Coast did. They bought big a couple of years ago. They started blooding through a couple of young guys, but they're still just not consistent in the slightest. Yeah, they've had injuries, but so have a lot of other clubs. It's just not going to work out for them. And I think seventh position is probably the best that they can do anytime soon.
I feel like the Knights are in a danger of really stagnating now. I don't really see any kind of like...
He's gone. Jed is actually gone there. So, he's back. He's back.
Sorry, yeah. I thought I'd gone because you two froze. Say my internet connection is unstable, so I do apologise. But yeah, I don't know how much you got on there. But I was just saying, I feel like the Knights are stagnated. I feel like they're in danger. They're too reliant on Ponga. There's not enough people there willing to take the game by the scruff of the neck. And I feel they're in a real danger of either staying exactly where they are or slipping off. And now I don't really know where they can go from this point, because I totally agree, Jamie. I think they've reached the pinnacle they have with the current squad and the management there.
With you both there, kind of feels like the cycle is about to begin again next year. Looking ahead to next week then, you've got Parramatta taking on Penrith Panthers. Kind of let you two come out with your predictions on this one, but do the Panthers have a chance against the Eels?
In my God, opinion, no. I think it's the Panthers to lose. It is the Panthers to lose. I think it's going to be a better game than Manly Roosters. I think it'll be a closer game. I think it's really time now. This is the time for people like Gutherson, for Moses, to be more than just a great player, to be a world-class player, to really win a huge, huge game where they're going to have the backs up against the wall. I think it's going to be Brad Arthur's turning point. I do wonder what's going to happen if they do lose this game to him. I think he might have a season max. Proper interesting game, and I'm sure he'll be looking forward to covering it for his next week, would it? What about you, Jed?
Jed, thoughts on it?
I feel if Eels do win, I feel like all's forgotten about the late slump. I feel like getting to an actual prelim will be deemed a success for them. And then it gives them a good platform to kind of, again, go for the final next year. Again, it's a young squad that Parra have got. It's not really, I can't think of anyone that you're kind of really losing, and a lot of good players have been brought in this year. And I feel like if you knock off Storm and then knock off Panthers as well in a prelim, it'll give them confidence and going forward for potentially the later on in this season and next season, which I don't think you've got. You've not really had that big scalp in a playoff, and I think that's what's massively missing. I touched on it a few weeks ago, saying it's maybe a lack of belief in their own ability. This is, as Jamie said, this is the time to do it, and if it doesn't happen now, I don't think it's happening anytime soon.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, sir. Here's hoping that at least we're kind of still in it at this stage. I know your two teams checked out a while ago, and that's kind of the NRL clocked off then, and interesting results coming out of Super League, weren't there? Going to give us a rundown of the lot, Jamie?
Yes, very much, mate. And I see Leeds getting an absolute pasting by St Helens, 40-6. Warrington just pipping Salford, 20-19. Hull FC getting nilled at home by Wigan, 10-0. Catalan Dragons still on the hangover from the league leader Shield win, 18-30 against Huddersfield Giants. Hookingston Rovers with a big win, 26-19 over Cass. And Wakefield Trinity giving the most Wakefield performance of all time, 18 points up at half-time, losing 26-18 to Lee Centurion's bottom of the table. First of all, lads, we'll come to the playoffs. Obviously, it's there's one round left. There's one spot opened up. It's Cass, Leeds and Hull-KR all going for that one spot. Hull-KR play Leeds next week and Cass play Warrington at home, who obviously already guaranteed a spot. It's all coming down to the wire. First of all, would it? Ryan Hall's out now for the season, which is a huge blow for Hull-KR. Would have been lovely to see him knock out Leeds. But who's getting that last playoff spot, mate? Who's standing out for you?
I think I'm probably going to have to just about side with Leeds, to be honest. I kind of had a decent run in the second half of the season. I think Cass could potentially turn over Warrington, but I think Leeds will be Hull-KR in kind of what is an extra sort of playoff game. So, yeah, I think Leeds will probably sneak into fifth based on that.
Yeah, I think I'm probably with you on that as much as it pains me to say. Jed, talk to me about the Wakefield game, mate.
I have to put myself through that. I mean, it's like we and you were talking off the pod yesterday saying we could have predicted that result a mile off. That is the most typical Wakey result you could ever imagine. A decent run of form, playing well, playing good rugby, bit of belief back. It's come to a game where we should win. There's no reason to not win it. A team that's only won once all season and we lose after throwing away an 8-point lead at half-time. It's just, yeah, it's just classic Wakey. It's just disappointing. It's just what we're used to in it, mate, really. There's not else to be said about it. I'm glad it don't matter too much in terms of the grand scheme of things, but we're just going to be the same type of club that just can't see games out that we should see games out, and it's just really frustrating.
Unfortunately so. Would it? St. Helens, big win against Leeds. Peaking at the right time, very much similar to a Melbourne Storm, really, down under. Are they kind of the favourites going into the playoffs, or are you still kind of looking towards Catalan?
I think I probably would still just about go with Catalan, although saying that, to be 18-0 up against home, against Huddersfield, and you're getting the league leader's shield presented to them, concede 30 unanswered points to Giants, doesn't really bode well at this point in the season. But I don't think there's much between those two. Just on the Saints game, if you've seen Alex Walmsley's stats at all, but he's absolutely on one. He had 13 tackle busts, 4 clean breaks, a try, an assist, 275 metres, and that's in 56 minutes playing at prop, and the metres he made was more than the entire starting Leeds pack.
That is unbelievable. That's very similar to what I used to do at uni.
Just a quick one. Do you think it's a bizarre decision to present a league leader's shield during a game? Can you guys understand that? It totally takes the focus away from the game at hand. It totally makes you lose concentration. And I'm not surprised they shipped 30 points in the second half. I've never seen out like that before. It's bizarre. Any of you see why they might have done that?
I genuinely don't know what you're talking about. So they did it in the game or at half time?
Believe they did it at half time, didn't they, Woody?
It was at half-time, yeah. So maybe that's why Huddersfield came storming back and Catalan's kind of celebrating already. And I don't know why, if Catalan's could have won it at Magic Weekend by beating Saints, why they didn't have it there prepared for, if they did win, to have it after the game, which would have made a lot more sense because they have actually been celebrating a win as well.
Just a really weird decision.
That's very peculiar. Superb stuff once again, lads. Very much thanks for joining me for episode 107 of Three Blokes and the Rugby League podcast. Head on over to all our social media pages where you'll find a variety of content which will hopefully pique your interest. Also, give us a rating on all our podcasting platforms if possible, please. It really does help us as we are available on all podcasting platforms. Keep an eye out for any future podcasts and interviews or have a listen to our archive with the likes of Tom Johnston, Barry McDermott, Adrian Morley, Emily Rudge, Jody Cunningham, Tommy Makinson, and this coming week we have Great Britain and Ireland international Joe Philbin as well. We will catch you all with the Joe Philbin interview and we will come back next week for the NRL semi-finals. Thank you everybody for listening and we'll catch you all down the road.